Thank you very much, Rabbi Lubin. Can you hear me? For your comments, your comment about Rabbi Chay Zichron Levracha's normal appearance and manner reminded me when I brought my wife to be to see Rabbi Chay, I was engaged here as a bocher. So when we left, my wife said to me, "He looks like a businessman." She expected a long beard and a longer coat, but that was part of Rabbi's appeal. It's one of my primary recollections. I'm here to share some recollections of a trait. That he, Nicole, he gave us speech classes. I also recall that I'm one of his great success stories. So I hope he'll be a man of the ocean for me tonight. And it's a schuss for you to listen also. In any case, it's a humbling experience to speak about him in front of people who've have a much deeper and or longer connection with him over the years. I do the best I can to share a few recollections and some reflections that I hope will be of value. For those who didn't know him, it's hard to describe the dmus of Rabbi Chay. The first word that came to my mind was dmus. How do you translate dmus? So the first idiomatic translation of dmus that came to my mind was that he was larger than life. That expression, larger than life. Larger than life. Afterwards, I realized that Rebbe would object to that term. It's a Hollywood term, basically. Rebbe held that life was large. It was not larger than life. Life is large. Man is great. Man can be even greater. Everybody can be great because life is large and the abilities and the potential are large. So Rebbe was a living spirit of the yeshiva, let's put it that way. But not just at the institution. Rebbe often said that the history of Klal Yisrael is the history of Yechidim. Yechidim made the major milestones in Jewish life made by individuals. And his keshu was with each and every Yechid in past and present in the Yeshiva. And from Rabbanus, we had families coming here for many years, that long after he had left them as rabbi, he had a very successful career in Rabbanus. And he influenced families. Like when he came to Israel, he had to visit, Rabbi Chait. People came, their children and their descendants came to visit him, kept the connection up with them. Talmidim in the field, all walks of life, and I remember specifically Talmidim who went to Rabbanus and Chinuch that he fought battles for out there, even fighting certain forces within the Torah world for them, when he felt that the truth demanded it. And he kept the keshu with them for years afterwards. And for those who are currently in the yeshiva, if you walked, no matter how you felt about yourself when you walked through the door, but when you saw the way he looked at you and that broad smile, you sort of felt you could accomplish things he had long since the spirit of accomplishing. He gave you the confidence, and years later we realized it came from his general, he lived godless all of them, but both the way he carried himself and the way he looked at everybody and their potential. And that's what he saw in you. Sometimes in chinuch you try to help people, and sometimes what they pick up is a sense of sympathy, best, and for the object of sympathy, but it really wasn't that way. He looked at you, but he lifted you up by looking at you. You felt just by the way he treated you. Just look at where he looked at you and walked in the room. He dealt with you like same with Govei Naim, like an equal sort of. He definitely had that element of dignity, Slabarka dignity, but there was no distance. So much so that you felt so comfortable around him. And I'm sure I overstepped the bounds many times, another wisecrack, another remark, which he invariably laughed at, and I realized how much time I wasted of his, but it was like almost impossible to resist. He felt so comfortable around him. Even though he was an incredibly busy person, you felt that he had all the time in the world for you. One Rosh Hashiva told me that he wishes that he could listen to the Talmidim and not show the pressure that he's under, but he can't do it. One of the branches. Who spent a lot of time with me, but that's what he said. He said the Altos Lobotka could do that. That Rosh Hashiva told me. Rachid was able to a large extent to do it also. You felt that when you were with him, he was relaxed, you were relaxed, and he had all the time in the world for you. Even if you could sneak past his bodyguard during lunch, especially, so for his health, there's people watching him, but lunchtime you'd go in, and he'd invariably offer you something of what he was eating. He didn't always, take it up the offer, but, and pour you a drink, sometimes, nothing exciting, there's a water cooler there, but, they'd sit there, he would listen to you, and while he ate lunch. The more often than not, he was still talking, listening to you and talking to you long after his hours were over. For health reasons, he was supposed to leave a certain time in later years, but he always went past the time. And when he got home, sometimes I would see, and he would get phone calls from people outside yeshiva asking for help, financial help, medical assistance, to consult with him. And he would give his time at home to those people. There were years that the next morning, he'd encourage us to be there at 6:30 in the morning. Davening was then at 7:10 or something, 7:10 or something, I think. And 6:30 to have a Shav Shmaitz or Imer Moshe, depending upon the year, Seder at Bachrim, to come. He was there. I don't know if they went to sleep at night, but he was there at 6:30 in the morning to have a Shmaitz or Imer Moshe at Bachrim. He would teach us not to be superficial. In learning, this meant one example I recall is that in Rishonim, to be precise in how you read a Rishon, the language of a Rishon, not, for example, to use Tosfos HaRosh as a expanded commentary on Tosfos. Sometimes you're lucky. It is Shon Tosfos, but it doesn't have to be. You need to look at it theological on Tosfos. Excuse me. But it's not. And in life, you teach not to be too superficial on how you look at people. Tell us a story when he was in South 9th Street as a bacher, and they were learning about Sfiras Nefesh, like Lubin described so well, often ostracized by their own families, and a local resident walked in, a religious neighborhood that they were located in, and took one look at them and said, I don't see the Yerushalayim here. That comment bothered him so much. He said, how could that person know, how can you judge Yerushalayim? Since the Chazal say, Yerushalayim l'kechlas ben etfren ha'msurim l'leiv. How can you judge Yerushalayim by the outside? Let that person know what these Bochum are going for, the Mesiris Nefesh, that they have bonus amidos that they're working on. It bothered no end, this superficiality. In his own life, an example of not judging by externals is in Tefillah. He spoke a lot about Tefillah, he wrote about Tefillah. he mentioned this in Chazal, this story. There's a Chazal by Yalkut Shimoni, which you often quoted, which mentions that Moshe Rabbeinu was told Alei Rosh HaPisgah before he died. That Alei was a sign of elevation. A sign of elevation of Madrega that Moshe Rabbeinu only attained after his tefillah stand to Eretz Yisrael. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu said no to those tefillahs, but those tefillahs catapulted Moshe Rabbeinu to Madrega way beyond anything he had been at before. You can imagine Moshe Rabbeinu's Madrega before that. The koach of Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah. So he wrote and spoke a lot about tefillah, but in his own, if you watched him daven over there with Stan, he showed absolutely nothing. He didn't even chuckle. He's a machlokes. He didn't even chuckle. Only b'fnei hamelech, but the fire was all inside. You didn't see anything on the outside. And yet, and what makes it all more amazing is the fact that it's hard for me even to believe I heard this myself, but he told us this. He said, speaking to the cold,